Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. I'm with Andres Lockton, who's the creator and inventor of the Pizza Steel and all of the Pizza Steel spinoffs that have happened ever since, we'll catch up with in a few minutes. We're on Pizza Talk, and Andres, I was wondering if you could help those people who don't already know who you are, didn't see the interview, and if you didn't see it, you can go back and search on Pizza Quest under Andres's name. You can find that interview, but maybe you could bring us up to date a little bit. Just tell us the story of the creation of the steel, because I know you started out basically in the fabrication business with your family, right? In Stoughton, is it Stoughton, Massachusetts? Is that where it's happening?
Stoughton Steel.
All right, so tell us a little bit of that, and then we'll get into some more nitty gritty stuff.
Love to. Thank you for having me too, Peter. This is amazing. Always amazing to run into you. And I want to give a quick backstory.
Great to see you again.
Of how I had met when I first started, and this is like 2012 and 13. You called my office. Totally random. And I talked to my dad. And my dad, I had just left. My dad had called and said, hey, and my dad's clueless to, you know, anything in the food world. He's like, hey, this guy named Peter Reinhardt just called you. You want to call him back? I'm like, Dad, do you know who that is? It's like the legend. This is the guy. I mean, this is, I still remember that day vividly, Peter. It was incredible. Then when I see you, I'm just like, I light it up because I've read all of your books. I'm a huge fan, which will give me a good segue into the baking steel. So I was in the culinary world in my young adult life. In high school, I worked at, you know, flipping pancakes, kind of got the bug working. Yeah. And then I worked in restaurants and studied culinary arts. And
You worked with Todd English, didn't you? One of the great American chefs.
Yeah, amazing. So that was my last professional like gig in a restaurant was with Todd English. And I originally was hired at Figs slinging pizzas. And I, you know, here I am, this culinary guy, and thinking like, I'm way too cool for pizza, but I'll take it. You know, it's like, I absolutely fell in love with pizza more than, you know, as a kid, and the passion that Todd had about his dough and his toppings and the creations of pizza, it just made me fall in love with what pizza is all about. So I took a deeper dive into that passion.
And Figs, were you doing wood fire pizzas at Figs?
Wood fired with gas. Yes. Ran about.
It was like in a brick oven.
Yeah. A brick oven. Totally. Yep.
I remember going into Figs back in the early aughts, like around 2002 or three, when I was living in New England. And so I had a pizza there. But I didn't know. Of course, you. I don't know if you were there that day or what. But Figs was very innovative. It was a trend-setting place for creative toppings on pizzas.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he did. He had his canvas with the dough, and he used a lot of water in his dough to make it like crispier, airy, crispy dough. And in fact, it's funny because I left the restaurant world and it's got burned out, and it just because of different things. But I needed a break. But I took all of Todd's recipes, for sure, right? And I would recreate them at home. I had a pizza stone. I would break them. And I was just kind of like, ho-hum, like, these are good. I'd make them for friends. But they weren't, like, super exciting. I always just thought in the back of my brain that you needed a wood-fired oven to really make it legendary at home. So whatever. So I just kind of went along, did my thing. And then... So I've been working in steel. My dad's an entrepreneur. So I've been, you know, obviously his son, been beside him my whole life. And I remember going into the shops, he would be working with metal. He was really good with his hands, like a street engineer from Latvia, you know? And
had he come over from Latvia, or was he?
He did when he was really young, when he was like five, his parents came. And he was,
so
yeah.
He was like a first generation immigrant to America.
Exactly right. Yep. First generation immigrant. And he had his own business. And so I grew up since the time I was 10, you know, sweeping the floors. I learned how to weld at a young age and just learned the kind of the, I loved it, right? The vibe of working with steel and working with your hands and making products. He had a really cool customer base. And anyway, I left there when I was 20, never thought I'd be going back there again. But there I was after my restaurant kind of gigs got tired. I went to back to work with my dad. And he, my brother was there, 30 other guys. I had some life experience now. And I thought, geez, you know, my dad's got a cool thing going on here. He's got a nice product. He's got a really great customer base. I've got some world experience now. Maybe I can help him. The one thing I liked about steel versus
the prodigal son returns.
Yeah, it's not going to go bad, right? Yeah. Steel doesn't go bad, unlike, you know.
That's true. It's a durable product.
Yeah, it's a very durable versus what's going on today in the restaurant world. I mean, it's unbelievable to me and sad to see what's going on in our state of restaurants.
It's
heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. But anyway, it got me to thinking that I just loved working with my hands as well. And then, so I've been doing that with my dad. I was more on the management side my second time around, helping us grow his business. But I'm a foodie, right? And I read the Wall Street Journal, an article on a Friday night. This is back in February of 2011. At the end of the day, just kind of hanging out, I read about the launch of the Modernist Cuisine books. And Nathan Meyerbold, as you know, I know you've spent a lot of time with them, and a real culinary genius, but a real genius on top of culinary, right? Amazing.
And all the lights start going off now, right?
All the lights. So I'm just reading about the book.
I just thought, just to interject here, you know, one of the things I find interesting with a lot of the people that we've talked to on Pizza Talk, it's interesting how many of us have two or even three different career tracks or paths that we have followed that somehow converge, and often through, you know, at the realm of pizza, but they come together. And in this case, it seems like, you know, you had these two different sort of avenues that were working, and then all of a sudden you needed something to kind of like diffuse them together and to that burst of light, you know, to make it all aha.
Exactly right. It was an aha moment. I read the article and he mentioned pizza and steel. And I probably did this to my, if you guys, the viewers are listening, but I did like a facepalm.
Oh, they're seeing you. They're seeing you.
And I literally went out to my plant and I grabbed a piece of steel that I used for a Caterpillar component. I didn't clean it up. I just brought it home. And my wife said, "What are you doing with that steel?" I said, "I'm going to make pizza this weekend." And I did. And, you know, it was one of those moments where I made dough that weekend, and I'll never forget it. I made a pizza in about six. I didn't really time it because it wasn't a big concern. But it was like 6 or 7 minutes. And we struggle, home pizza makers. I had a crispy crust in 7 minutes, and I was mind blown. And so I went back to my office on Monday, and I told my brother and my father, I've got this new idea for a product. And they basically, this is 2011. The economy's just starting to come back from where it was. We make Caterpillar components, John Deere components.
Yeah.
We're a fab shop. How in the hell are we going to do a kitchen product? I agreed with them. I shelved this thing. Great as an idea this was, I didn't have belief in myself or my business to produce it. So there it was. And I let it go.
But the seed was planted.
And I don't know about you, but we all, and I know you've had a million ideas too, and some of them just will not go away.
Yeah.
You need to jump down that rabbit hole with those ideas and really try to learn and figure out what it was. And so there it is. It was like, you know, I came out with on Kickstarter literally a year and a half after reading the idea. A lot of stuff happened. Fear. Being afraid of, you know, trying something new and all these different elements. But I did it. I took a chance. I took a leap. Thank God. Thank goodness that I had the faith in myself to do that. Super lucky and super grateful every day still. But because I went out and did something I'm passionate about, like the universe kind of came back and spoke to me. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? You're supposed to be doing this.
Yeah. It's interesting because that moment when you're at the edge of the cliff and you have to decide whether you're going to take the leap or not, you know, that's a moment of truth for so many entrepreneurs. And I'm sure that if everyone shared their experiences, probably have a commonality of that fear and, you know, wondering, is this the time? You know, what happens if I don't make it to the other side of the cliff, or et cetera, et cetera. But you have to take the leap or else it's not going to happen.
So true. And you need to get to the other side and whatever it might take to get there, but you got a strong belief in yourself and don't listen to anybody else. Just mm-hmm. do it. Obviously you need feedback.
Well, let me ask you something. At this point, read through now the Modernist Cuisine series. Have you kind of got pulled into that whole food science nexus, so to speak, that Nathan Myhrvold and his team created? You now were immersed in that and modernist molecular gastronomy. All that was exploding around the country. So that played a big part in you making that leap?
Oh, big time. Just seeing what they did. And then it was more of like and that was incredible what they did. And still, I still go through those books. And they, obviously, the bread version, which is, I know you had your hand in that one as well.
I was involved to an extent. And now I'm very excited to know that things full circle, that the modernist cuisine people did modernist bread. Now they're doing modernist pizza, which should be coming out, you know, sometime either this year or next year. So, you know, it all comes back to pizza in the end, right?
It all comes back to pizza. And, you know, and one thing about our story and what I love about pizza is it's for sharing. It's like making pizza with friends and family is to me like the ultimate evening or afternoon together with people. And it's always been about that for us. It's just like building that community. That's why I love throwing pizza parties because it's not, we don't all sit down together. We all kind of stand up and hang out and converse and have conversations. And it's about the food sometimes. It's about the story of the food. So it just lends itself. It's a beautiful evening with.
Of course. But let me just take a step back for 1 second, because you had gotten this sort of the modernist books kind of sparked something in you. Was there something in there that made the connection for you with the steel? Was there something about the science aspect that brought out? And can you explain how that kind of all came together for you?
That's great because, it was steel because he had said in his article to Google your local steel shop and cut out steel for your shelf. Well, it was in that moment that I said, holy smokes, like, we knew from science in middle school that, you know, steel conducts energy really well. Like, you can touch the end of a fork that's hot and it'll eventually spread out and burn your hand, right? Well, that's what's happening with steel and pizza. Well, steel stores 20 times the energy of stone. So what we can do at 500 degrees in a home oven is equal to what stone can do at 800 or 900 degrees. So it's the mesh of perfect, it's the perfect storm. It's steel in a home oven.
Right.
Boom. Like, there you go. It's like, now you can
He's saying in the book, go out and get yourself a piece of steel, and you're going, wait a minute, I can make this damn thing. He's speaking to me. He's talking to me.
He's speaking my language. And by the way, you know, my dad's plant had $1 million worth of equipment that could produce this thing. I designed it in literally 35 seconds. Like, I can do this, I can do this, and I can do that. There were some, obviously, difficulties doing it, but more or less, I had everything I needed right in front of me.
Yeah.
To produce
it. Yeah, exactly. So, you were the guy in the right place at the right time, except you just needed to have the courage to, like, turn it into a business instead of just...
Big time. That took a lot. And that's, I still deal with that. But it helps because now that I've done it, I can go to the other side now. Yeah. If I'm really struggling with something, I can look at the uncertainty and say, you know what, take a chance. Because as long as it's not going to harm me or do anything harmful to anybody around me, let's go do that.
Well, the nice thing was you didn't have to necessarily invest in a steel foundry and get all the equipment. You were there ready to go. So that gave you a head start, at least a springboard into it.
Huge advantage having
the business side, of course, is a whole different story. So about what year was this that you actually decided to go ahead and start manufacturing them and launching them? When was the Kickstarter?
At the end of 2012.
Okay, so that's almost about eight years ago.
Yeah.
And then, and I remember that I heard about it, someone along the line, I'd heard about this deal. Some people had asked me about it. I think you were doing some work. Maybe you were writing with Serious Eats or doing some interaction with some of the folks over there. Was it Kenji or some of the great voices out of that community?
Incredible.
And then I had I've been using a pizza stone for years, and I was taking it with me somewhere to do an event, and it slipped out of my hand and shattered. And I remember going, I need a steel. I can't keep breaking stones, you know? And that's when I contacted your dad. Well, I contacted you and your dad answered. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I remember. It's great. It's a great story.
Comes together. Well, I know that some of the folks who are watching probably have the steel by now, or they may want to know how they can get it. And of course, we'll put links on our site so that, you know, okay, but just if they want to contact you, what's the best way for them?
Great. So our site,
the website or directly.
Yeah, our website is bakingsteel.com. We have our own Shopify store. I'm Andris at Baking Steel. So please email me any kind of questions that you have. You know, we have a pretty good presence on Instagram. We're out there almost every day posting our stuff and user stuff. It's beautiful. It's so
They're great photos and great, you know, postings if you haven't caught up with us. I mean, now it's no longer the new kid on the block. People know about it. It's not like the hardest part of the job was to make it, you know, acceptable and to get it past sort of that hump.
Totally. Yeah. And that's still, we still have that, you know, we still, I mean,
now people want them. They want.
Yeah. No, like no one's heard of us. I mean, that's like, we're still kind of the new kids on the block, even though we've been, you know, at it, but we're consistently posting about, I mean, the basic science is that it works. Steel works at 500 degrees, you know, just better than stone. So
when I first contacted you, you first sent me, you were doing two different things. You're still doing them in two different thicknesses. I know one was real heavy and you had to be totally committed to get that one. And then was one more the sort of like the, okay, I just want to give it a try size, you know, and even that was pretty heavy, but it was like at least manageable. Are you doing both options now?
We still are. And you know, the thicker the steel, the more mass, the more energy it stores. But, you know, truth be told, Peter, if you had asked me to make pizza with you, and it would be an incredible moment, and I could bring whatever I wanted to, I'd bring two steels with me, two quarter-inch steels. That's my setup now.
You mean you put them together, two steels, one on top of each other?
I put one on the top shelf and one on the bottom shelf.
Kind of turn it into a...
Yes, and it gives me...
Essentially a brick.
Right. Puts the broiler in play, but it also just allows me to make multiple pizzas in succession.
Gotcha. But the quarter inch is not the thick. It's not the thicker of the two, is it?
No, it's 15 pounds. It's our thinnest one, but it needs to be at least quarter inch.
So for a ballpark, for thinning, and for folks who are trying to get their mind around this, about what would the investment be for a home cook who wanted to get this? I know, actually, by the way, a lot of professional restaurants are now using them, and they're essentially upgrading their kitchen ovens to be able to bake at this level just by using your tools rather than buy a whole new oven. But for those who want to just get one for their home use,
$90
are the entry levels?
Yeah, $89 is the original baking steel. And, you know, they'll look at it, and that covers, you know, we pay for the shipping that's included in that price because of our...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's not cheap to ship a big
steel. We obviously would get a better rate than most people because of the volume that we're doing. So we share that cost in all of our shipping. It's awesome, Peter, that size. It's 15 pounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at it like, well, I'm never going to have to order, and I shouldn't say never, but you're going to reduce the amount of times that you call up Pizza Hut or Domino's because the quality that you can produce in your home, especially with the right ingredients, is well beyond what you can get in most ways.
And obviously, not just for making pizzas. You can use it for so many things. And I even have one of your later generation products now, the griddle. Are you still making the griddle? And is that
great question? Yeah. So we learned because of modernist cuisine and the science behind the steel that it conducts energy so well. It's not just great for pizza. It's great for, you know, put it on your grill and make smash burgers. I don't know if you've had a smash burger yet. They're unbelievable. Or just searing.
I just had burgers. I've had burgers and steaks on my steel. Yeah. But you know what? I have to make a smash burger because I hear the term and I just thought it was just sort of like just another way to say hamburger, but it is actually a specific way of doing a burger, isn't it?
Yeah. You take a 2 ounce patty and you literally smash it like a pancake and on a very hot baking steel. And because the steel conducts energy well, it's every square inch of that baking steel is 450 degrees. So you're getting this patty, the Maillard effect with the proteins.
Great sear.
Like that. Just a great flavor.
Well, I know that you've got, an oven behind you, and I'm guessing that you have a steel floating around there in your kitchen. We're going to wrap up this first segment with Andres Logsdon, the inventor and creator of the baking steel. Much copied, but never surpassed out there. I know that I've seen knockoffs. And we'll talk more about sort of the genesis and the creation of the steel, but also how to use it. And can you make something for us? Can you do something?
You know what? I'm happy to have
given up the ingredients on hand to put something together?
Yeah, we got
something. Okay, so I'm sure I would love to see it in action. Again, I know that I'm preaching to the choir for those of you who already have one, but for those who have been curious and wondering, chance to see the inventor actually using it. You know, it's not just Thomas Edison, you know, moving on to the next project. This is growing for you. So thank you for being with us on Pizza Talk. Andres, thank you for giving us sort of the backstory. And in part two of our talk with and conversation with Andres, we're going to get into actually putting it into practice and we'll see talk about the future of where the baking stone is going. I keep saying stone because we're so grained, but the baking steel is going.
Awesome.
Is that the term, the baking steel? Is that the term what it's called? Baking steel? Yeah. Baking steel, yeah. Or exactly. Just as those who use the steel.
Stick around for more Pizza Quest after a word from our sponsor.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
So, you know, while we've been on a break between our first segment, you've been setting up your kitchen and firing up your steel. And what are you going to do for us today, Andres?
I was going to make just a cheese pizza. I've got a dough sitting out. I haven't been to the market as frequently, so I don't have a lot of fresh produce.
Any kind of pizza is fine with me because it's all pizza is great. I think most people really want to see the steel in action.
Yeah, great.
And see how it. And maybe while it's cooking, you can talk a little bit about how it bakes differently than say a stone or
great advice. Yeah.
So what do you got? Why don't you get us going here?
Well, get started. I'm gonna show you guys a quick close up of this dough here. This is like a 5-day dough. So it's been literally proofing and almost by accident. I always have dough in my fridge, so you can see how like soft and supple because this dough has been literally just chilling out.
Yeah.
The glutens are so relaxed now. And I think that's one of the real advantages of longer ferments is that the dough becomes so easy to stretch.
Yeah.
And I think when people just touch that for the first time, they're like, oh my goodness. Like they think you're a genius, you know?
You are a genius.
Yeah, right.
But in this particular instance, what kind of flour did you choose to use for this dough?
So this is a central milling flour. It's their high gluten organic flour, high mountain. I think it's their equivalent to bread flour.
So, but it's a high gluten flour. It's not a double zero quote.
It's
or
not a double zero
style. Okay.
You can see, I don't know if you can see all these bubbles that this thing has. It's like just from, because I haven't really done much with very little initial mix. And then I did a counter proof for about 12 hours and then a cold proof. And I got the cold proof from you, Peter. I remember reading your book about these cold fermentations.
That was, for me, a big breakthrough technique is using, that long cold fermentation. How much hydration do you use in your dough?
This is about a 70% hydration.
Okay. So it's not outrageously sticky like a ciabatta, but it's soft.
Not at all. It's pretty easy to handle. Not for a beginner. It's a little challenging, but they get used to it. But you can see, I'm going to pick this thing up. You can see the bubbles, but I'm going to, if you can see my hand, I don't know if you can even see my hand, but the gravity really does everything. I can bring the camera up. Gravity does everything. I'm just kind of working around the perimeter.
Yeah.
And you can see how much this thing's, and this is about a 250 gram ball.
That's exactly the way I shape my dough at home as well. Using the back of my hands, my thumbs only in the, at the edge, no pulling or stretching, which is not the way they do it at pizzerias. We had Chris Decker from Pizzeria Metro in Vegas do a nice demo for us on how they stretch their doughs there. Absolutely. They're using definitely a firmer dough, and it's all done on the table by spinning it in that flour.
Yeah, those guys are masterful the way they do that.
I like that technique that you use because it doesn't squeeze out all those gas pockets that are in there.
Yeah, we've got and it's natural, right? Because I've got bubbles kind of throughout this thing. And some people, if it's enormous, I might pop it. But the smaller versions of these, I love. I think they add so much character to the dough. It just makes it more unique, like a snowflake.
And so it looks like you're getting ready to transfer it over to your peel?
Yeah, I've got, this is probably about 10 inches right now. I'll talk about the peel. Obviously, most of your readers or listeners will know what these are. I just prefer wood when I'm launching because I think it helps with some of the moisture. I like to
use
it.
It's funny how we in say the home baking community have our hacks for things. And pizzerias, they have no problem using metal to do the load. But I find that I can use metal great to pull it out, but I love using wood to put it in.
Same. And I use a combination of flour and semolina flour.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I like that little texture. And
the
metaphor I use, that's my ball bearing on the dough, right? Because it's got to be loose. And when I place my dough on top of this, it needs to be loose like a hockey puck. So my ball bearing has got to work. And before I do sauce, before I do cheese, I got to make sure this thing's loose on there. And if it's not, then I'll just pick up that troubled area and, dust a little flour underneath it just to kind of get it going again.
But
anyway, that's it. And I could stretch this out bigger, but I like it to be a little puffy in places. So I keep that, relatively small, but I've got my baking steels. As you can see, the oven's here. I've got a steel in the top rack and I have a steel in the bottom rack. It's been preheating for 1 hour, maybe an hour and a half. I just switched my oven over to broil. So this is an electric oven. It's on broil now. This oven might take, I'm going to bird dog it. It might take 3 or 4 minutes before that broiler kicks on. At that point, I'm launching.
So you've got a stone on top. Are you baking on the pizza on the bottom stone or the top stone?
Top stone.
So it'll be under the broiler, closer under to the broiler.
Yeah, I'm about 6 inches away.
Will you have the broiler on or off when you put the pizza in?
On.
You're going to bake it under the broiler. Wow. Yeah. Okay, so in other words, the steel itself has absorbed enough residual heat to radiate back into the undercrust, and then you're going to bake it off with the top heat.
Exactly right.
Oh, all right.
And that, I like that extra heat on top just for the initial oven spring, just for the first maybe 60 seconds, 90 seconds. And then I'll turn the broiler off.
I see. Okay. So you're going to give it a big blast right at the
front. It'll get too dark. And you can see I'm topping, I don't know if you can see me topping my pizza here.
There you go. That's better. I can see it now. Yeah.
I always like to say less is more. I'm sure I got this from your book too, Peter, but if we think we have too much on there, we probably do. Right?
I agree with you. I like to just kiss it with sauce, but not have it swim in.
And I'm going to give this thing a little shake again. I'm still loose like a hockey puck.
Yeah.
It's a good sign. I like the, in fact, I'm going to work a little faster here. My broiler just kicked on.
All right.
I'm going to go with some oregano on top of the sauce. Yep. Yep. Right? And what I have is I have some provolone slices right from the deli counter.
Yeah.
I'm going to cheese this thing up. Some provolone.
I see you put the sauce down first, but since you have sliced cheese, do you ever put the cheese down first and put the sauce over?
I could do that too. I might even add some more. I've got a little fontina. I'm just going to add just to kind of add another little
definitely cheese. One of my favorite cheeses.
Right? It just melts so nicely.
I love it. Love the flavor of it too.
Yeah, I agree. And then I've got some Palm Reg I might use afterwards, but I'm just going to do a little bit more sauce on here.
More sauce, huh?
I'm going to give it a shake. And now, if you guys can watch my, I'm going to move this oven a little closer to the oven. My broiler's on. So my back of the peel goes to the back of my steel. I kind of just shake it off.
Shake it off.
And now
you're baking so close to the broiler that for some people this may be a scary proposition, but you got a timer on it. That's good. So don't forget.
Yeah. If I'm cooking the broiler, I'm using a timer.
But 2 minutes under the broiler.
2 minutes. Because wow, 2 minutes, incredible. I'm going to check this thing. It's probably going to be, my broiler is still on, so it might even be faster than that.
You can close your doors with your broiler. When you close the doors, it doesn't cause the broiler to cut out.
In
my oven, I've got an old GE, 1982 oven. When I close the door, the broiler cuts itself off automatically.
A lot of them do that. So you have to learn the tricks. I always find learn the tricks of your oven.
Each oven, yeah.
They are on. I have a gas one here, and the gas is nice because once that goes on, it just stays on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Electric are a little bit more finicky. They have some brains behind them. So, but you can see, we'll take a peek inside. I'll turn that up, light off. You can see the, I don't know if you can see the pizza in there, but it's looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's trying to get some color, but I want to keep the door closed. I'm cheating. after 2 minutes, I might rotate this a little bit just because, the back of the oven is definitely a little warmer than the front of the oven, to kind of even it out a little bit. And we do this in pizza ovens too, right? When we're manipulating.
There's no oven that bakes perfectly the same in every zone.
It's not going to happen, right?
No, I agree. So in fact, everything you're doing, every step that you're taking is exactly the steps that I teach when I do my pizza classes, including that shaking and jiggling of the dough to make sure it's not sticking to your peel. Because after all this hard work, the last thing you want is to go to the oven and not be able to get the pizza off the peel and into the oven.
We call it the unintentional calzone, right? All right, exactly. So that's 2 minutes. Let's take a peek.
All right.
So you can see my rack slide out.
Tilt the camera. Yeah. There we go.
My rack slide out, which is really nice.
That's nice.
The top of this pizza actually is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn the broiler off because I don't want any more top heat.
Right.
Now I want the bottom to catch up to the top. Gotcha. But you can see it looks pretty awesome. So
it does look pretty awesome. That's only 2 minutes in.
That's only 2 minutes in.
When you preheated the oven, Andres, what was the temperature you used to preheat?
I did it at – this is a little hack that I do in my home oven. I preheated at 450. So – and the reason is when I go switch to broiler, the broiler is going to kick on faster because I've tricked the oven. If I preheated at 550, the broiler is not going to kick on.
I see. So when you turn the broiler off and go back to bake, do you go back to 550 then?
Yeah, I went back to 500.
500. Okay, yeah. So 450 was just so that the oven wasn't so hot that the broiler wouldn't come on.
Exactly right. Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, we learned our ovens teach us things. John Arena always says you have to listen to your dough, but I think you have to also listen to your equipment too.
Yeah, you have to know your equipment really well. And these, by the way, are monogram ovens. They're beautiful. I really love them.
That's a great new series that they've come out with. Yeah.
Incredible. And so I've got, you know, so if I was doing multiple pizzas right now, I would have moved that pizza to the bottom steel and launched a new one on top.
Got it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every 2 minutes, I'm kicking a pizza out, which is incredible fat. For home, that's fat. So I'm going to take you guys for one more trip up here.
Yeah.
It's been about 3 minutes now, and I'm pretty happy with what's going on here. I don't know if you can see this.
There we go. We can see it now.
Yeah.
We got some nice char. How's the undercrust looking?
Bottom looks amazing. Starting to brown up a little. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I might go burnt myself, but I might go like 30 more seconds.
Okay. And that's about it.
We remove that out and we're done.
That's like a 4 minute pizza. Four minutes in the oven.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And when you make a pizza that fast, by the way, you're getting a sear on the outside of that crust, and inside, that's where the magic is, right? That airiness.
I don't want to take your attention off the oven because I want to get this out at the perfect time. But then when it comes out, I'd like to explain to us a little bit of what was going on conductively wise, you know, in terms
that's
of
great,
the heat from the steel.
I'm going to pull this out right now, Peter.
Okay.
Quickly.
So really, you're baking it at about the same time as a lot of pizzerias. About a Pizzeria Bianco is baking theirs at about 3.5 to 4 minutes, and it's not the 60 to 90 second Neapolitan bake. It's more the neo Neapolitan bake.
It's exactly. It's like because you can see underneath is cooked beautifully.
Yeah.
Right. I can hold this thing up, so it's got some firmness to it. I went a little heavier on the sauce than. But I like that. I like that sauciness.
That's Gus. You're from New England. New Englanders always love the sauce part, you know, more than some others.
But you can see this. I've got some color on top, which I like. But on the bottom, we're also cooked beautifully. So it's got some firmness to it. And again, this is what the steel does so well is that I'll talk about it here. One, because I use the broiler, I'm getting the color on top. But then when I turn that broiler off, it gives the steel time to get, you know, fire back into that dough again and get that bottom cooked. And I could have even gone another 30 seconds on this one. But I really like this style where I've got these big, big air bubbles. You can see these bubbles here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
incredible. If I slice into this.
Do you put any dry cheese on the top when it comes out?
Good question. I almost forgot, but yeah.
See, it's ingrained in me. I love putting that on at the end.
At the end, it's just a beautiful, and I might even throw a little, some basil on at the end too.
Right?
Some fresh basil. This thing is ready to take a picture for Instagram.
There you go. Yeah. Better get your shot now before you cut into it. And that way you can get this interview and an Instagram all in one shot.
I'll have to make another pizza for it. But.
All right. Cool.
But that's it. I might, you know, some people might put olive oil on top. I mean, whatever, if you feel like it. It smells incredible. That basil and cheese.
So I learned something when you were making this, because I'm so used to baking the pizza without the broiler. I just eat my oven up to 550. Okay. And it's usually about, in my home oven, about 6 minute bake. And my oven at Johnson & Wales, where I can get the oven hotter than my home oven, I can get them out in about 4.5 to 5 minutes. But you got yours out in about 3.5 to 4 minutes. And the broiler trick, I think, is a new technique that a lot of I don't know the pizzerias are doing, but a lot of home cooks are doing it.
Using
the broiler to really amp up the heat, especially. But I've never seen anyone actually bake it under the broiler. I've always assumed you turn the broiler off. And then just, you know, let it happen.
You could do that and get extra heat that way as well. But I use it for production. If I go do a demo somewhere, usually it's for multiple people. So I'm making a lot of pizzas. I'll bring two steels. So after the first 2 minutes, I'm going to the bottom steel. By the time I make my next pizza, that steel's already back up to temperature. So I'm literally kicking a pizza out every 2 minutes, which is unbelievably fast.
Yeah.
In a home environment.
That's pretty cool.
Sweating. Needing a break.
Well, feel free to cut into it and have a slice. We'll vicariously enjoy it with you because we certainly want to see, you know, what it looks like inside while it's nice and hot and crisp. And then we can also talk a little bit about what that steel did that, say, a stone doesn't do.
Great. You hear that crunch?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I can see you were holding that knife because you wanted to make sure we heard that sound.
I was pausing.
I love the sound of crust.
Oh, it doesn't get, you know, it's funny, Peter. I've probably made, you know, thousands of pizzas in here, and every one I make is just as exciting as that first one. I just, even this is incredible.
It's really interesting that you say that because, you know, John Arena's been making pizzas for 55 years. Massive. Brian Spangler about 25 years, and they both said the exact same thing, that it never gets old.
It just doesn't get old. It's mind-blowing, and the smell, the aromas, and you can see that, I mean, the crust is just amazing. Like those bubbles in there.
Oh, my gosh. Can you hold it even closer to the camera so we can really see that structure? So yeah. that bubble, of course, is a real blowout, but it shows us how fully gelatinized those starches are because you got that shiny, gelatinous kind of glow from it.
It's that, really good.
That brings a lot of joy when you have that.
It does. You can see how it's holding itself up pretty well too. That could have cooked a little bit longer, but really it's, my kid would love this. Like I kind of make them for the kids because I know they'll have lunch.
Do your kids eat everything all the way out to the crust?
They do. Yeah.
Out to the crinitia. And do you, now here's the big test. This isn't something we learned from one of our other demonstrations. Is when you take your first bite, do you take the bite from the nose or do you take it from the bones?
I go from right here, the nose.
You go there first.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the nose.
Go for it.
Mm. My goodness.
And of course, we all wish we could be there with you, but those who were watching, you know how to do it now, so just go ahead and do it.
It's so good, Peter.
Yeah.
Just crushed tomatoes, a little parm, a little oregano.
So I'm going to throw a few questions at you in terms of your technique. First, let's talk about the steel. So the steel baked it, probably when I baked it on a stone, it would always take at least a minute and a half to 2 minutes longer than on the steel. The steel, everything happens faster. And what's going on thermodynamically that's making that happen?
So that's a great question. And what is happening is, you know, if the stone and the steel are both at 500 degrees, you can't cheat the science, right? 500 is 500. Well, what happens when we open the door up and we place a room temperature dough on there, well, it's going to suck up some of the heat from the stone or steel. But what we're finding is that it sucks up more from the stone. The steel continually rebounds right back to where it was. Super, like 20 times faster than stone.
Oh, I see.
That's an enormous amount of time.
Quick recovery, yeah.
Really quick. And that's why it works so well. And that's why I've got two steels in there because essentially I've got more. Someone had a funny comment. They called it steel estate your oven.
Right? Yeah.
But it's giving me more hot spots throughout my oven. So if I'm doing multiples, it's great.
Yeah, and it's of course it's holding heat in the oven even when you open the door.
Yes.
You're not going to lose it as much.
Everything's just better, and so it's amazing that all that heat. And again, 500 degrees for pizza is like that's the thing. It's incredible.
How well are these selling now? I mean, can you estimate how many you've actually manufactured and shipped to this point after being you've been in the game what 5-6 years now? Commercially.
So, I mean, we've shipped over 100,000 units worldwide by now, easy.
And how many are you selling to the professional trade, to the restaurant trade?
I don't think it's a very high amount. I don't think
I've seen them. I've seen them used in restaurants, and I've seen chefs tell me that they've lined their ovens with them. So.
Yeah, see, I won't get a lot of that data. I mean, other than when I talk to these guys, but I know a lot of them are taking their traditional ovens and making them pizza ovens. Because essentially what I made here is a deck oven now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, turned it into a deck.
So it cooks great at 500 or 600 degrees. So we make a lot of them.
So Brad, one of our producers, just told me that he's got both a stone and a steel. And so he uses his stone as sort of an insulation tool. Huh. Because in other words, for those people who have stones and they're wondering, you know, do I have to like retire it? You know, there certainly can be uses for it. If you have the steel and you want to just add extra sort of the brick oven effect, then why not use a stone to help hold heat in? Because it's really, isn't it really just essentially a thermal mass? Isn't that the key to the whole thing?
Even that temperature out. And Brad, by the way, make sure we connect after this so I can, we'll have to replace that stone in there for you.
Maybe that was his ulterior motive for letting us know that. But I think it's a good thing to know, because people who have the stones, and I still have my stone. After I replaced my broken one, I still have my stone, so I keep it on hand. Because you never know. I have two steels, so I can do like you did the double thing. But before I had the second steel, I would use the stone as my second level.
It's one good use for it, but it's amazing the difference.
So you shipped at least 100,000 of these. Is the business growing? And what are some of the spin-off products that you see?
Yeah, that's great. Coming out of this? So yes, the business is growing slowly and methodically every year. And that's thanks to you and the word of mouth and the whole vibe of, social media. And we're really consistent about posting and educating on how we, use our product. I'm really passionate about it. I teach classes in this space here once a week. Helps.
That's a big plus, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things, scale the unscalable, right? Where we take 10 people in at a time. And so, yeah, we are growing. It's amazing. We're growing at a really good pace. It's manageable, but fun. It's really a challenge in building a brand. Really.
But it is now. So are you now full-time on this company, Baking Steel, or are you still working, at Stoughton Steel, for your dad?
So I spun off from my family business on April of 2018. So Baking Steel is now its own entity. The better news is that my brother at Stoughton Steel makes all of our steels for us, which is great.
Keep it in the family.
So we're still working hard, coming out with new products. We have new, our griddle is a newer version of what we do, which is a stovetop version of our steel, and it's heavy and it's awesome.
So is the griddle designed to be used on top of the stove, on a stovetop, as opposed to in the oven? Because I've used mine in the oven.
Yep, they do both.
I use it for broiling steaks.
Perfect.
I get those great grill marks and stuff. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. So it goes in the oven or on top of the oven. And we've got some different sizes that were coming out. In fact, we have a new size coming out soon. We found a way to, we cook our breads on here, Peter, which is awesome.
Yeah.
They can, one thing that about breads is funny. They can brown a little bit too early. You're baking like a baguette. So I made these Baking Steel bracelets.
Oh.
These are cool. You'd actually like, I'll send you some. Baking Steel bracelets. So at the end of my bake, right, what I'll do is I'm going to lift the bread off the steel and place this under there for cooling. So I'm going to get some air underneath it still. So I'm still cooking my breads, but I'm not going to burn the bottoms.
Interesting. That's a great technique. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's made out of silicone, high temp silicone, so they can withstand, 400 or 500 degrees. But my baguettes now that I can make, unbelievable. Like, incredible.
Well, once again, I think it really comes down, and this is where baking science and baking craft kind of come together, is understanding how thermal mass and thermal heat, works and how it penetrates your product and how to make your oven more efficient as well, because home ovens are notoriously not as efficient as commercial baking ovens to being able to hold that heat in.
Right. So that's incredible.
So this has brought it all full circle.
Super
great. Do you see any other new products in your future?
We do. Actually, we have something coming out. I'm not sure of the timing. We have a couple, with what's going on on the planet right now, we're pausing, obviously. It's sad. With new stuff, we're just trying to get the original stuff still out. But we do have some new products coming out, and more of this variations, incremental improvements over what we have. We're always trying to innovate, trying to keep it, listening to the feedback that we get. It's unbelievable, the feedback. I'm so grateful for it.
Well, I think it's exciting. There's a whole spirit of entrepreneurship out there. We talked with Mike from Mike's Hot Honey recently. He's launched, again, same idea, taking that leap from, sort of a hobby of a product that he created to turning it into a business. And running a business, it takes all your energy. It takes everything you got. They used to tell me when I opened my bakery, my baking mentor said, remember that your bread is only 10% of your business. 90% is marketing and dealing with solving problems. And
so
And I realized that, you know, once you've got to have a great product to get the business going, but then you have to be also dedicated or if you're not the one for that, then bring in a partner who's a business-minded person, because business takes, it never, you can't go to sleep every night without solving problems. And
it's nonstop. It's 24/7. I've never worked more in my life, but exactly. You know, if you're really enjoying what you're doing, I don't consider it work. I'm super fortunate that I built this test kitchen / barn 5 years ago. I took a risk. I took, you know, on that personally, I paid for this thing.
Yeah.
Still paying for it, but it is turned into my home office, which is invaluable these days to have some space.
Well, let me ask you this. If people who are watching this are sitting on an idea of their own and they'd really like to, they're considering, you know, what next steps might be, would it be okay for them to write to you and just ask for real life advice from you?
Yeah, I love getting those types of questions and what should I do type of things, and how can I help give you a little bit of confidence to take that, at least that next step, because you've got to take the next step, right?
Well, you've already written one book, right? You had the Baking Steel book. Are you still working your chef Craig? Is he still working with you?
Craig still works with me. Yep, he's here every day. Well, not right now, every day. We're mobile.
So you've got a book, but I'm wondering does that book also include some of this sort of life lesson advice, or is that the next book in the
maybe
in
that's the next book. Yeah, this one's more food, more pizza centric, but there's a lot of, there's so much stuff. As anybody who knows, and like yourself who's entrepreneurial, making the steel is the easy part. You know, marketing is a 24/7 job, just getting out there and you know, the one thing I'll say, the one piece of advice, just be consistent with your own self. Take care of yourself. Like, that's one thing that we cannot overlook. Be kind to yourself, and that'll translate into, you know, more everything. Just be kind. Be kind.
Do you have employees now that work for you that are on your payroll?
I do have employees. Yes.
So it's gone from being a one-man show to being a business.
Yeah. I've got a team, and you know, I built this on the backs of the 2009 recession. My previous with my family business. And one thing I wanted to build for my business was something small, also mobile, right? And we're fortunate that we're able to operate in this environment successfully, and we're super grateful for that. I don't have a lot of overhead though, which is important.
Right? Nice. Well, you know, it's great to see that what you did. In my mind, this is my sort of phrasing of it, is you connected the dots from different threads of your life and came up with something that created a new product for the world that has really sort of, I don't know if this is the right word or to punish, but it galvanized, you know, the way people, you know, think about cooking again. So thank you so much for all of that, for your contribution, for your hard work, and for being an inspiration. And for those who do want to write to Andris, Andris at bakingsteel.com. Is that the way to get to you?
Right. Yep, please.
Or go through the website.
Yeah.
And if you don't have one, you know, maybe it's time to start getting one. Do you also have instructional videos on YouTube where you show people?
We've got a YouTube channel with a lot of stuff on there. Obviously, our blog has got a lot of stuff on there. And we're continuously posting on Instagram, Facebook, always content to help you learn. And we learn from you guys too. Your feedback is amazing.
So those of you who are using them, you know, feel free to keep sending your feedback, any thoughts, questions, maybe suggestions. This is the exciting part. This is the legendary time of a business, is when it's launching and early, and then your grandchildren will have stories to hear from you later.
I hope, right? That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, Andris Lagden, thank you so much for being with us on Pizza Talk, and for all that you're doing, and for making a beautiful pizza for us today and showing how easy it can be done at home. Thanks.
Awesome. I'll try to devour this now. Thank you, Peter.
Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/ Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.